Back once again for the SAFTAcast. I'm your host, Scott C., forever your girl. Folks, we have a great show for you today. I know I say that every single episode, but it's the truth. I think this show just keeps getting better and better with each show we do. It keeps developing. It's on a roll, you know? It's going to snowball. Like, 6 months from now, it's going to be an entirely different program, almost. It's going to be even better than I could imagine it to be. That's the faith I have in this program. I really do. Now, folks, we do have a good show for you today, but before I start talking about today's program and everything, let me tell you a little bit about what's going on around the Sundress realm and things. Say, friends, do you want to be a part of the Sundress Publications crew? Do you want to be a part of Firefly Farms? Do you want to have your stamp, your mark on the Sundress Academy for the Arts? I can tell you how. Because right now, Sundress Publications is looking for a few good interns. They are looking, so if you have experience in the following areas, if you have experience in theater, community relations, graphic design, online development, marketing, agricultural and animal science, well then, just get on over to sundresspublications.com/interns for all the details. The resume deadline, though, is May 1st, so if you want in on it, and all the rights, lights, and benefits thereof, being a part of the Sundress Publications family, and believe me, there actually are some great benefits to being a part of it. Again, for more information, I encourage you to check out sundresspublications.com/interns. Folks, are you a young writer? Are you an undergraduate writer? Specifically, are you an undergraduate poet? Well, I've got an opportunity for you, and I'm bringing this up now. It's a month and a half away, but I'm still bringing it up to you now. June 13th through the 15th of 2014, down on Firefly Farms in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is the home of the Sundress Academy for the Arts, Sundress is hosting a 3-day, 2-night camping and poetry writing trip. This is going to be taught by 3 of the resident poets of Firefly Farms and Sundress, Erin Elizabeth Smith, T.A. Noonan, and Rhonda Lott. It's designed for current and recently undergraduate students, but those who are looking to go to graduate school, this trip is a great chance for you also to refine your portfolio work, generate more, and learn about the ins and outs of graduate school from 3 PhDs in poetry and creative writing. Now, the total cost for this thing is $200, but understand that that cost includes all food and drink, transportation to and from Knoxville Airport. I don't know about the Chattanooga Airport. That's the closest other major airport. I don't know about that. And all on-site amenities, tents, sleeping bags, outdoor equipment, they're all available for rent upon arrival if you need them or you want to rent them, whatever. But understand, folks, space is limited on this workshop. Space is limited to only 10 poets. So reserve today. And I will tell you right now that there are less than 10 slots available. So if you want to get in on this action, go to the Sundress Academy for the Arts Facebook page. You do a search on Facebook for Sundress Academy for the Arts. You will find it. You can find all the details. Again, that is June 13th through the 15th, and it's going to be a blast. Who knows? There's a fair chance that yours truly, Scott C., will be there, probably avoiding the farm quadrupeds because I'm going to be honest with you. I'll tell you a secret now. I have a slight to mild phobia of horses and horse-like creatures. Now, why did I tell you that? I told you that because, in a sense, that's what this episode is about today, is about secrets and about getting deeper into our psyches. This is part 2, if you couldn't guess already, part 2 of a 2-part interview with author Danny Huey Jr. This time around, we get a little bit deeper. We go a little bit deeper than just talking about superficial pop culture things that we both enjoy. We actually get a little bit deeper on this one and talk about our own psyches to a degree, and at various points during this very episode, both of us say, wow, I really did not expect to say that openly and publicly on the radio. But that's what it's all about. That's what the SAFTAcast is all about. Getting deeper and enjoying ourselves and having some laughs and ball at the time. Because, and trust me, folks, I can't even begin to tell you how awesome this episode is and the episodes coming up. As a reminder, this episode took place here at the Sundress Academy for the Arts podcast home base in South Florida, and we did this live here in the office. So the mic quality isn't the best, but we did what we could with it and everything, so you may want to turn your radio or podcast device up just a little bit to hear this. We tried to do our best, but again, that's just the way things are sometimes. Folks, you know what? Let's just get to it right now. But first, wait, hold it before we get to it and the excitement that comes with it. We got to have a touch of the theme song.
Mm-hmm. So this is stuff that goes on in my brain, Scott. Like, I'm always trying to figure it out, like, how do I get past, because I want to be, you know, despite, you know, beside the right, I want to be a good human being.
Yeah.
Right? I want to be the type of person that if they say, well, I called Danny and he helped me, right? I want to be a good person. What does all that mean, right? And I think for me, if I can kind of, because I can be in here and we can still be having a conversation, but if I'm sitting up inside of my head, I'm putting my hands on my head, folks, sitting inside of my head, right? I can, like, look, everybody else around me just doesn't exist, right? Mm. I don't ever want to be that person who is so inside, right, that they don't connect on some level with people.
Mm.
So my fear, you know, this is, to be honest with you, is that I will be so inward that I don't have connections anymore.
Mm. So you go so introverted you can't get out.
Right.
There is, again, you're preaching to a choir here on this one. Yeah. I will be honest, I have a tendency to blockade myself.
Mm-hmm.
I put up walls, basically, and prevent people. There's very few in my inner circle. And it's not that I don't want that. It's not that I don't want more people in there, that I'm some kind of cold, evil bastard.
Right.
But I have a problem with locking myself off, especially if I get isolated.
Mm-hmm.
I will further isolate myself and not communicate. And there's an additional problem. I don't know if you have this one, because you seem like a more gregarious person than me, just off, you know, just from talking with you.
Mm-hmm.
And what I know about you, I have a real problem with making the first contact. Even if it's a close friend I've known for 20 years, my biggest problem is I can't be the one to drop a message on Facebook or a phone call or a text and be like, hey, I haven't spoken to you in 6 months. Hmm. How you been? I have a real problem. So what I do then is I think, well, if people want to talk to me, they got to shoot me the message first, and no one ever does, and so they think I don't want to talk to them,
right.
And it creates the further division, the further wall, and I isolate myself further and go crazy.
Mm.
So there's a big problem. So for those who know me, I'm openly admitting it for the first time. This is my problem. It's not that I don't want to talk to you, but ever since I was like 3, I encountered this over Christmas. I was talking with Tiffany about it and my family, and my mother said to me, she's like, do you know why you had 2 years of pre-K? I said, no, because I took 2 years of nursery school, which I thought was just because, for whatever reason,
right,
I go to kindergarten. The teachers my first year apparently told my parents, he has a problem connecting with people, and he needs another year of socialization. So that's what they did. And so I remember being like 5, 6 years old, past pre-K, asking my mother to call someone to see if they wanted to play. Because I couldn't do it myself.
Hmm.
And I still have that ability, you know, in my 30s. So that's why people down here, you know, think that I'm some kind of non-social person.
Hmm.
It's not that I'm not social. And the reason why I spend most of my weekends here at the apartment is not because I'm down doing work or anything. It's because I can't make the first contact kind of thing.
That's interesting.
There you go. I just openly admitted psychological issues here on the podcast.
Well, yeah, I think we both
have. I think everybody has their issues. So there's an issue right there for me, right, as a writer.
Right. Right. And I just think that I honestly believe that if we can have these type of conversations with people, that it'd be easier for us to navigate. I really believe
almost like
that.
Therapy sessions, yes, in a way.
Because our writing, I mean, on some level, becomes that way. But also you want to have in conversations with folks who can kind of get, oh yeah, because I'm not a small talk person.
Mm.
So, and if you're in my circle, you get this, right? If you're not in my circle, you get
the business. You get,
right.
Okay, let's get to the point.
Right.
Done. All right. Good.
Yeah, and I'm not really good when people try to force themselves into my life, and I don't like. Like, when I first started working there, everybody was like, what are you doing on the weekend? I was like, oh, my God, why are you asking me these questions?
Now because I feel bad for inviting you out on the first weekend.
No, but the thing is, I'm glad that we did that, right? But it was like, people who give me a chance to see what you're about, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Like, so it's like, you almost have, like, not suspicions of somebody, but cautious at first.
Well, I think growing up the way that I did, right? I think growing up in the inner city, growing up with that fear that anything could happen, right? Yeah. I think that's just a part of, it's a natural part of who
just
I am.
Just a little bit guarded, a little bit cautious about things.
Right.
It's like, okay.
And then I'll try it out.
You seem cool, like, boss. Okay.
Right. And I think a lot of that is a product, you know, we are product of our environments, right?
Yeah.
You know, growing up in a space where you could get killed for just looking around, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was really, and a lot of people don't, a lot of people assume that, you know, that because I have a PhD that I've always, for some odd reason, they think that I'm middle class, grew up middle class, mm-hmm. and that, you know, but that's not the case, right? When people, mm-hmm. people are surprised when I tell them, no, I grew up in the projects.
Mm.
They're like, really? I say, yeah, across the street from cemetery. In the projects.
It's like, right? You want stories? I can tell you stories.
Right. And the people are, a lot of people are surprised by that, because if you don't know me, you don't know my story, right? You don't know that. So,
and then you get into a problem, though, if somebody, you know, questions that or anything, then you feel almost compelled then to prove your ghetto-ness almost. And then it becomes problematic for you.
Mm-hmm.
Going, wait, why should I have to prove this?
Right.
Is this something that I should be proud of or not? You know, almost plays hell with you, that
right,
little bit.
Right. Yeah, because I'm very clear with people. Like, this is where I'm from, right? I don't hide that, right? I've mm-hmm. never been one of those people afraid of where I've come from, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I always tell people, you know, you can do better, you know,
mm-hmm.
but I also am very clear about it ain't fair for everybody, right? So I'm very clear about
yeah.
that. But, you know, I tell people, you know, this is where, I didn't know I was poor until somebody told me I was poor, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know we were poor.
You never know the situation
when
you're kids.
We had food, we had, you know, we had clothes, they wanted designer clothes.
Nikki
right?
Giovanni puts Nikki right. Rosa, you know, black love is black wealth.
Right.
Never knew the situation until people told me there was a situation.
Exactly. So I tell people that all the time, like, yeah, I didn't know I was poor. Just somebody told me I was poor.
Who does?
And I was like, oh, really? What does that mean? Right? And then as you get older, you realize what it meant, but...
As far as you were concerned, it was like, it was a happy life.
I had food.
You had food, you had shelter,
and I love to eat.
Family.
I love to eat. Like, that is one of my favorite pastimes.
That's one of your weaknesses.
Oh, I can eat fried, and I know this is really funny, because, you know, I'm really, really black, right? So I tell people all the time that I don't eat watermelon in public, and I don't eat fried chicken in public, right? But I love fried chicken, right? I can eat fried chicken.
Argue
like...
with it. And there was an article on Cracked a few months ago mm-hmm. about that particular issue of, we've got to get over those two as a racist symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Because fried chicken is good. It's
it is.
Tasty. Who gives a crap? You know, we shouldn't associate it with, oh, you shouldn't eat fried chicken because... Screw you. This is good fried chicken.
Right. And it's a lot of white people I see eat Popeyes. All the time. Not that I...
Yeah.
I'm going to Popeyes a lot, y'all. But I see it, right? So this is very... Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're... when I was at University of Houston, I taught a class called Protest and African-American Essay.
Mm.
And so we looked at James Baldwin and Gail Pemberton. Because
right? mm-hmm.
he did The Fire Next Time. She did, you know, she did a book that was kind of similar to
yeah.
The Hottest Water in Chicago, kind of mimicking Baldwin. And I told my students about the watermelon thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the semester... They took pictures. They kicked me out of class. They took pictures with watermelons in their hand. I don't know if you come to my office. I had to put it.
Okay.
But it's in there. So they took pictures of it. So it's the whole class with watermelons smiling. And they made it into a calendar. It was really cool. And we just let him say, Doctor, who are you crazy? Eat just a watermelon, right? So everybody had watermelons. So we were trying to get fried chicken, but we know you probably would have went crazy. I was like, thank
yeah.
you for that. But you're right. I think at some point we have to work through some of these things. But
I mean, watermelon is tasty. Watermelon is tasty.
But the thing is, I don't even like watermelon.
I'm not
really
a big
funny.
Fan. I'm not a big fan. I used to be when I was a kid.
Right.
Loved it.
Yes.
As
yes,
I got older, I like the taste of it, and I can deal with it like in a fruit salad. But if somebody's like, "Oh, we got a watermelon for the picnic,"
yeah.
I'm not going to eat a slice of watermelon yeah. and be like, "It's water." That's if I want water, I'll have a glass of water.
It just
Thank
does.
You.
It just doesn't do anything for me.
It doesn't really do anything. For
and
me
I remember
either.
As a kid, we loved it.
Oh, I loved it as a kid.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, loved it.
But I'm not going to argue with fried chicken.
Oh no,
I will not. I will fight people on fried chicken.
Meat in a heartbeat. And the funny thing is, I don't even, you know, because I've been working out a lot and eating a lot better. I don't eat it as much, and I miss it.
So the thing about that is, because I went through a whole gym period over the last couple of years, and eating better and trying to make myself better.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to slack off. I'm sure I've been slacking off recently.
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple reasons I won't get into.
No.
One is schedule. Another is just, well, I could talk to you off air about it, but this is actually a
medical reason. I've actually been slacking off. Part of it is that I got injured last fall, and it wasn't from the gym. I got a really bad cold in September, and I coughed. I coughed and tore the muscles in my pec and shoulder on the right side because I coughed. And that's the problem with getting older. My mother-in-law sneezed one time and tore her back.
So
it happens as you get older. Just the cat playing with his toy out there. But we were talking about French chicken. You've got to get over that feeling of guilt over it. Eat it once in a while. If your body is craving it, it's calling for it. Just don't beat yourself up over it and don't go, well, now I've got to go to the gym extra hard on this.
Right.
No.
Right.
Accept it, you know, and enjoy the hell out of it. It's what a trainer told me is that, heck, you know, you're going out on vacation, eat. Enjoy it. You know, if you get a dessert, you get tiramisu. Like, my wife and I, we love having nice dessert on our anniversary. And we were working out at the gym. The trainer said, we were expressing it. I was like, well, I don't know. We're going to have to skip dessert. He said, enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy the hell out of it. Enjoy it to the fullest. And don't feel guilty about it. So don't feel guilty. When I get sick, I can tell if I'm really sick with a bad cold because I will crave fried chicken. I don't know why. But my sinuses go, we need fried chicken now. So I don't feel guilty about it if it's good.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You gotta have because if you crave it, if you don't get it, you're gonna overindulge,
and you're gonna hate yourself.
You're gonna binge eat, and so you're right. You have to
give in to your cravings once in a while.
Yeah. And it's okay because especially if you're eating healthy,
It's okay to occasionally go, all right, I need some fat, greasy food in my head right now. Give it to me. It's okay. So okay, you love to eat. Love to eat. I know that.
I love food. What else do I love?
There are many things that you love, I'm sure.
I love... The cat is funny.
The cat has this little chirping toy that he is obsessed with because it makes a chirping sound and he can go after it. And and now he's currently sticking his foot under the door and such, trying to get in. But
So if I wasn't a writer or a teacher, I would be a baker.
Really?
I love to bake.
I have had some of your desserts over the last couple of beers, and I've got to say, you put some people to shame when you bring it over. I'm like, oh, damn. Oh, damn. Danny's bringing dessert. Oh, damn, yeah.
I love, like,
that in a good way, too.
Right. One of my fantasies, right, is to have a bookstore / bakery.
Okay.
And, you know, have people can buy books or whatever, but the real pull would be the baked goods.
Poems and pastries.
Yeah. Oh, that would be... That's a nice title.
Mm.
But yeah, I love... Like, I could... If I could really... I always wanted to go to culinary school.
Mm.
My mother's like, no, you gotta go to college. But it is college. She's like, no, it's not college. So, you know, whatever.
No.
But...
He is driving me nuts with that.
Yeah, you can let him in. I mean...
Nah, that's cool. Anyway,
I would...
Culinary
baking.
School.
Yeah, I would bake. I mean, baking relaxes me. It really... gives me time to spend, like when I have a long week, I'll bake, just go and bake, and it calms me down, it gives me time to think.
I would think it's a combination of, it's thinking, but it's also low-level thinking. Mm. Like, fun story about me is that whenever I used to break up with somebody, the first thing I would do after we broke up is I would go clean my car extensively, inside and out, detail it myself, because it was a low-level thinking activity, but it was keeping me busy.
Right.
So I didn't have to think about, I just broke up with somebody, or they broke up with me, and it's over. But I could still, it was almost like symbolic in a way. I'm cleaning out the car of the past and getting it ready for something else, the next mess to happen in the car. And I'm not saying my exes are a mess, but
right.
I guess some people could interpret what I just said that way. But we've all got our bad exit stories, so.
Yeah, and I just, when I bake, I just don't eat it. I'll give it away, right? Because I know that, you know, I love sweets. Yeah, I love sweets. Like, I have a sweet tooth. I have, like, a sweet mouth.
You have a second stomach for sweets, basically.
I could eat, I love peanut butter.
Peanut butter's not that sweet. Peanut butter's one of the greatest foods ever made.
It's just good. Like, I like peanut butter ice cream. Anything peanut butter, I'll eat. Anything with peanut butter, I'll eat. I walk around the house with a spoonful of peanut butter.
Same here. If I'm too lazy to get bread, I will just wander around the house with a spoon and the jar of peanut butter, just eating it from the spoon.
And it's really not, you're not supposed to eat a lot of peanut butter, right? Because it's really fatty. But, you know, I love peanut butter. I love butter, but you know you can't anything with food. No, seriously, and I realized,
and we're recording this right at lunchtime too.
Right. And I work out because I love to eat. Like, I just have to be very clear. But I also have to realize that, you know, when my mom passed away, I spent a lot of time in the hospital going through heart stuff, right, making sure that my heart was fine, and I, you know, it was like 3 months of tests, and I was up, my blood pressure was up, and it was also
from
because
the stress
of it.
Okay,
and because my blood pressure has always been fine, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and so just the whole stress thing made me realize, you know, I have to, I'm almost 40.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't eat like I did when I was in my 20s, or
I can't either, you know. I found that too with living on my own now for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I can't eat like I did when I was a bachelor long ago. It's like, I would joke because my wife hates SpaghettiOs, and I used to love them, and I look at them now, and I'm like, I can't do it.
SpaghettiOs? You know? I have not had SpaghettiOs since I was, like, in, like, high school, Scott. That's so cool.
But now my body, you know, my body's like, hey, we haven't had broccoli in a few days. We should probably have some broccoli or some spinach, you know. Hey, the body's craving the greens. I think it's what happens is that about every 7 years, your taste buds recycle completely, and they change. So your taste physically changes in things.
Wow.
So you look at, like, I've tried to cut fast food out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, I'll succumb and be like, I'm sorry, McDonald's breakfast, you are evil.
Right.
Must have McDonald's. But your body changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a few years ago, I grew up in a household. I'm from a Danish household. Hmm. We don't understand food, okay? What we understand as a spice is salt. That's it. There is no other spice.
Oh, wow.
But salt. And Danish food is actually, the cuisine is very bland. Very disgusting in a way. This is very bland. Dessert-wise, they're killer.
Mm.
They are known for their desserts and coffee and dairy. But for the most part, this is a place where we pickle fish and lye. And that's called lutefisk. And the joke is that you spray your throat with Pam to make it go down faster.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up in a household, we didn't have those kind of foods. But I grew up without a very wide palate of food spices and such. So my wife, who's from Louisiana, was like, oh, hell no. Mm. Hell no, I'm going to show you what etouffee is. Although she can't have it, she's like, I'm going to show you what etouffee is. She has this, you know, shellfish allergy.
Right.
But she's like, now red beans and rice are a staple of mine. I love red beans and rice. You can just throw a plate at me, I'm like, ah, wonderful. Excellent, let's have some good bread to mop up the gravy on this. Shoot. But, I don't know where we were going with this, but that's the great thing of this cast, is we don't have to worry about that.
Just food.
Just food in general, food. Man.
Wow.
So was your mother a good cook then? Brought up on
my
that?
My mother that side? Could
Or was your father a good cook? Huh?
You know, my father, the best thing, the memory I have of my father cooking for us, he made us grilled cheese sandwiches with mayonnaise.
Like on the outside or on the inside?
Inside. So he would put mayonnaise on both sides and then put the cheese and grill it. It was the best thing. I've never, and it was like, that was great. But my mom, she could cook. She could really cook. She can't bake. She couldn't bake, though.
Mm.
She couldn't bake to save her life. No, the one thing that she could bake was a peach cobbler.
Mm.
My mother could make the hell of a peach cobbler. Other than that, nothing. She no cake. Like, so I became like, I'm always the designated baker for the family. Even when I was in high school, that's when I really started to
learn. So now I'm curious, how did you discover baking? When, you know, if your mother didn't teach you?
Well, my aunt. We live next door to my aunt, who makes, when I say everything from scratch...
Everything
from scratch. So I was sitting there and just watch her. I was like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm baking. So I would watch her bake everything from scratch.
Mm.
And so I was like, well, I want to learn. Can you teach me? So she taught me how to bake.
Okay, so that's where the passion comes from, man.
Yeah, and so just, I do everything, like literally everything. If I had a bigger place, I'd be rolling out pie dough somewhere.
Mm.
But just because I don't have the space, I don't make my pie dough from scratch.
Right.
But everything else is
You
from
try
scratch.
To do everything as much as you can from scratch, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, everything. Cakes, pie, everything.
Freshest ingredients type of thing, and that's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking is actually very easy.
It is.
if you go fresh and simple, you don't have to be complicated.
Right, but I also, you know, come from that southern background, right? Mm-hmm. We fry everything. Right?
Yeah.
We'll fry a banana chip. We fry everything, right? So I had to learn how to not fry everything and not overly season stuff. But we like flavor, right?
Yeah.
Southern
you gotta have the flavor and intensity.
Yeah, and the soul, right? It's something about soul food. That's what they call it, soul food, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to also, like, when my mom was alive and when I started to look healthy, I was like, okay, can we at least you know, because my mother makes this. She can make some greens that make you sop up the bowl with your fingers. But I had to say, can you make it with, instead of the ham hocks, can you make it with the turkey wing, right? So I tried to get her to, and I got her to cook with olive oil. She was, you know, she was the fried queen.
Yeah.
But I was like, can we just bake these chicken wings sometimes? So I would have her. So, she, you know, she would do a little bit better, but yeah, our family's some cooks. We cook. They cook. We have
an amazing family, because we've been talking about it. It's like, okay, they're artists, they're singers, they're comedians, they're storytellers, and they're cooks. You know, it's like, you've got an amazing family then.
I mean, they're good. I mean, they're crazy too, right?
Every family is
crazy, but when we get together, it is a good time, and we always laugh, and of course, you know, we have trauma, right? We have all the stuff going on in our life. But I think for the most part,
and that's what family is tested, is with the trauma. Mm-hmm. And every family has that on one level or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some, it's much more intense, much more, you know, big traumatic thing.
Right.
Others, it's a quiet trauma
right.
that happens, or it's mini traumas.
Mm-hmm.
In my family, we don't have many huge traumas or many breaks or fractures where people are against each other.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the unified front on both sides of my family. But we do have our little traumas that I can see. And that's really the test of the family.
It's always a good time. My family's always a good time.
And I see that in your writing. I see the family aspect and the music aspect. And, you know, come back to the music thing if we can for a moment here. Country music is one, but I know that in, you know, especially in your first book, and Butterfly.
The funny thing is, I called it
M. Butterfly. Right over there, there's a book, the libretto from Madama Butterfly. That's
why.
The funny
thing is, I called it M. Butterfly one time, too. So that's not even the name of your own damn book. I even said that myself, so that's funny. I called it M. Butterfly one day.
But in there, there's a lot of talk about jazz and such in that, and it's written in such a way, in my eyes, coming from someone who loves. Whenever I see music in any kind of story or anything, if I don't know the song, I will go look it up. I will learn it because I want to know what is the sound that that character is hearing at that moment. How does that affect the scene? Because music affects my scenery and my world.
Right.
So I'm reading it and I'm like, it's written from someone who obviously knows their shit about it. It's not written by somebody who just, oh, you know what? Let me look up famous John Coltrane songs. And maybe Coltrane would fit here, but someone who has intimate knowledge. Do you have a lot of jazz knowledge?
That's the thing. I don't.
Really?
I don't. I think. Because
I just paid you this huge compliment. Now you're like,
I appreciate
actually,
it.
You know, actually,
thing is with
I'm
music,
full of shit.
Not full of shit. But I listen to a lot of music.
Mm.
I just don't. How do I say this? I don't know a lot of artists' names, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I listen to a lot. I listen to a lot.
You know the sound.
Right. I know the sound because I think I have an ear for music. Right?
Mm.
So I can, when a person is singing, I know if they're off pitch, but I catch all those things because of my ear. So when I listen to a song, like I'll listen to some songs and I won't even pay any attention to the lyrics.
Yeah.
I'll just focus on the melody.
Mm. Right?
Or vice versa. I won't hear the music. I'll focus on the lyrics. So I have this tendency to, I can isolate.
Yeah.
And listen very carefully to something.
Oh.
And then break it down. Right. I think for me, in terms of music, when I'm thinking about music, I think about it intellectually.
Mm.
And then I think about it artistically, right? Which I don't know if they're separate, but
you're again preaching to the choir on this one,
right?
Because I can't fall asleep to music. You can't have a radio playing and expect me to relax and go to sleep, because I will focus in on the lyrics. I'll focus in on sound.
Mm-hmm.
I especially find it when I'm flying.
Mm-hmm.
I put my headphones on, and there I go into what I call the meditation, where I can hear in headphones because I don't like earbuds. They got to wrap around the whole ear for me. And I will listen like to the main ingredient. I remember it happening when I was listening to the main ingredient with Ken Griffey Sr. and Everybody Plays the Fool. And I'm listening to it and I'm like, I've never heard the bass line of this track.
I do it all
wait a minute, time. Wait a minute. No. There's the electric organ. Whoa. Okay, now it's going off on that side, but they're doing the stereo mix. And I can hear it so much because I'm concentrating. And so I'll listen to it for pleasure at first, but then eventually I get to intellectual and aesthetics. What is this track doing?
And because I love language, like I always, and I love the way songs are constructed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that everything that I write has to be constructed like a song.
In some way, yeah.
So I have to know these different parts, right? Mm-hmm. So one of my other lifetime dreams is to be a choir director, to direct the choir. Like, I always want to put the parts together, right? I always want to be like in the first line of the first chapter, right? They argue like three part harmonies, right? Because I see myself. This conductor taking this music, breaking it down so each person understands their parts, but in the end, it all comes together, right?
It's like, okay, this character, you're going to be doing this, while this one, all right, I want
you're
you over
soprano,
here doing
you're
this.
The tenor, you know, you're going to carry this bass line. So that's how I look at that. So when I'm listening to music, that's what I'm doing in my head. And then when I start writing, I'm doing this, I'm transferring it, right? And so I think that for me, The writing becomes, because I like love songs.
Yeah.
Right? I like sad love songs.
And that's why you're in a country.
I do. It's something about, because I think we all want to be loved. I think no one wants to go through this world and not, even if it's a friendship, what type, romantic.
You want love.
You want love, to be loved. And I think
that we desire it, right?
And we'll do so many detrimental things to us.
We do stupid things. Love makes us idiots, really.
So I like love songs. So I think that I like the. I mean, I like the crescendo. Right? I like the build up. All of that stuff for me goes into the language, right? So when I'm writing, I sometimes listen to jazz, right? Or I listen to a blues song.
It's a meditative feel.
Because I like the rhythm, right? I love the rhythm. I love the constructing it. So I'm very, very careful about that.
I found that I could write to music in the early days, but now I can't do it. If I'm listening to music, I start concentrating too much on that and wondering, okay, what can I do with that? Oh, God, I haven't heard this track in a while. You know, it'll pop up and be like, oh, such a beautiful album. And then I'll start wandering off and talking to myself over coffee about how great this album is to nobody. And I'll forget all about writing. And so it's very difficult writing poems that about my love of pop music.
Because
I want to start listening to the album, or I want to try and match the style of a couple of them I've been working with are in the style of songs. They're tributes to that song. And I can't do it because then I want to listen to the song, and then I'm like, I'm trying to match it to the song, and I'm like, no, it's got to be me, and then we come back to the shut the fuck up and write thing.
I could be up all night on YouTube listening, watching music.
Oh, I am too.
From the 80s to 70s. Like, I'm a true 80s baby when it comes to music, right? I like this because in Cleveland, especially, one thing I love about, this is what I love about Cleveland, right? We had this, you know, we had every state city has their black radio station, right?
Yeah.
But the black radio stations was so, they played all the popular stuff, but they also played a lot of local music. They had a lot of local talent, and they would really, you know, promote them and play them. And what happened was when, as the city became, you know, as the poor black folks got poorer, right, they kind of got rid of the black radio station. And so it's not, and it used to just be R&B, so now it's a mixture of things, right? So it's almost like they've taken away some of that energy, right, from those communities. Right?
Okay.
That's the thing that I love about soul music, right? It's the fact that they're singing about some realities, right? And they're expressing themselves in a way that they can do without being penalized, right, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
Without being punished.
It's a very freeing thing. That's why Aretha can drive what she drives down and why she is the queen.
Right.
Because she can do it without fear of any kind of retribution for doing it. On one hand, I can see that being very liberating, but also it's kind of frightening to even say it that way, that you can, that there is even that retribution and the fear of it.
Right.
And it's kind of, on one hand, very liberating, very empowering, but at the same time, very disturbing to put it like that.
Yeah. So yeah, so I'm always, I mean, if anything that you read in my, it's a song. Like, it's, I'm constructing lyrics. I'm constructing these stories. And
you know what you might consider doing then? It's like when you publish a book, you should put out like a suggested soundtrack for this for readers. Like, here, you know, pull together a mix disc on your own. I won't tell you to go get these songs. I won't tell you where you can get them. You know? But I encourage you to listen to this music while you're listening to this chapter.
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool because, like, I mean, the jazz guitars, like, I'm always fascinated by, like, jazz fascinates me to the point because what I love about jazz is, especially if you see a live jazz band, right? Which I think are brilliant. They, you know, everybody, somebody start playing, right? They just pick up and they add to me. So it's like, and within my family, right? A lot of this is, when I think about my family, right? When they tell stories, right?
Yeah.
So one uncle, my Uncle Rand, he'll start a story because he's always the storyteller starting person, right?
Yep.
And then my Uncle Mac, a pickup, it might be a very different story, but somehow by the time we get to the end of it, it's all connected, right? So when I think about it, that's what jazz is for me, right? Jazz.
Somebody starts a phrase, and then somebody picks the phrase and then starts messing with it a little bit, but connects it to it, and then suddenly you got the barrel sax will come in and be like, well, I'm going to take it down an octave, and I'm going to go low with it here, but, and then the drummer's like, I got what you're doing, I got this for a moment, and then they weave it together without calling out, like, all right, you, take it.
Yes.
There's no, it's not like rock and roll where you go, blah, 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 take it, Jim!
Right.
You know, it's like that.
And it's everybody's connected, right? But they're not the same person, right?
No.
So that's what I love about
I've seen that especially in Miles a lot. Oh, yeah. Miles can do it. Yeah. Coltrane, I love Coltrane.
Coltrane.
And you see that flow, that mix. I don't know, something about bebop jazz I gravitate to. I think it's, I grew up on, in my early 20s, the formative years of music for most of us. Your childhood, your teens, then your 20s. After that, it slows down. Mm-hmm. And your tastes are kind of locked. But in my 20s, early 20s, I discovered Frank Zappa. And I discovered experimental music, and it was really my first entry into non-conventional, what I had been raised on 80s and 90s pop. And to this day, I am still obsessed with cheesy 90s love songs. To the point where my wife banned, she would not let me even get 10 feet close to that. I DJed my own wedding reception. Because I didn't trust anybody to do it, and besides, I wasn't going to pay $400 to DJ when I have the equipment.
Right.
But I really wanted to do All For One's I Can Love You Like That. I love this song. My wife can't stand it. She wanted to kill me for it. They met you, Cinderella. You hoped it would come true. That one day your Prince Charming would come rescue you. I'm doing a little faster, but my wife's going to hear this episode now. She's going to punch me. She's going to punch her radio or iPod and be like, damn it, he's doing it again. Play All For One. But anyway, so I grew up on that, and then I dug Frank Zappa in my 19, 20-year-old state, and suddenly the world was open, and I heard textures, I heard styles, I heard sounds that I never thought of. So I think then I can deal more with bebop jazz than, nothing to take away from Duke Ellington or anything, of classic jazz, but something I gravitate a little more to experimental flow fusion. But that's not me. I feel like we're talking about me now. We should be talking about you and everything and such. So you have a very eclectic music sense then. It seems like, you know, all over the spectrum there. Country, jazz, gospel, blues, rock and roll to a degree, hip hop, I'm sure. You can't argue with some beautiful hip hop.
I'm old school hip hop though. This new stuff, I tell my students all the time, I was like, guys, I don't really know. I mean, it's some good stuff out there, right?
Kanye's got some great stuff, I think.
I think his first album was his best album.
Some of my Dark Twisted Fantasy is pretty solid, honestly. What I say is, you know, the title track Monster, here's my thought on it. Kanye, decent. Jay-Z walks it in that track, in my opinion.
You know, great, I don't like Jay-Z anymore. I used to like Jay-Z.
I did too, but he's become like too producer.
Yeah, I don't like Jay-Z anymore. I really, I mean, you know, Tupac and Biggie, those are my, you know, I love Tupac, Biggie, Nas. I mean, so all people that, you know, early 90s, you know, late the 80s, like, all those people, you know, they helped, you know, move hip-hop along, right? But the stuff now, the funny thing is, I love Lil Wayne. You know, I think he's, like, he's really good with words, right? He'll craft a really good line, right? But I just don't see the, and again, this could be the intellectual side of me, right? Sometimes I don't see the consciousness.
The passion's gone. Right? No, I know what you're talking about. It's the social consciousness is disappeared.
Right.
in favor and the common criticism is materialism, mm-hmm. is commercialism. And there are critics who say, actually, no, that's a good thing in it. Because who wants to be poor? Who wants to talk about being poor?
Right. But I think there needs to be a balance, right?
I think there does. And I think that where you're seeing the social consciousness is in the underground scene right now. It is very potent in the non-mainstream. And bless the internet for this, mm-hmm. because it is allowing those voices to come back.
Right.
And we can hear, it's much easier for someone to hear underground hip-hop in Atlanta in Seattle and go, whoa, this is what's going on.
We need that. We need to still be fighting these fights, these causes.
And global hip-hop is this way, too. Global hip-hop is amazing. Mm. You're getting some stuff out of the Netherlands, Dutch hip-hop? Really? Some solid stuff that's coming out. I don't know. Modern stuff, there's some good stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm right in line with you. I am what they call the old school.
Mm-hmm.
I can have conversations about Afrika Bambaataa. Oh. I can tell you about, the Beastie Boys and why, there's solid stuff. LL Cool J, who's still pumping out good stuff. The man doesn't age.
He doesn't.
He's like David Bowie.
He
doesn't age.
I just don't understand it. Like, he's...
Prince, again, it doesn't age.
It just don't.
LL just does not age. Don't get it. But I'm right with you. I love Public Enemy.
Oh, yeah.
Dearly. Chuck D frightens me and exhilarates me. He is one guy I would want in my corner, but I would not want to go up against in a battle, in anything, because he would just destroy me. So there's good stuff out there, I think.
It is. And some of it is catchy, right? I like a good beat, a good beat to get me anytime.
Then when
I start listening to the lyrics, I'm like, oh, Jesus, what are these people saying, right?
Yeah.
Where's the, a lot of these rappers are smart,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm thinking, come on.
You don't need to dumb it down.
Right.
And
it's just like, man, this is, and I hate to say this on air, my homeboy's going to hear this, right? That Drake's new CD, the latest one, is actually really good.
No, got a lot of good press.
It's a good CD. It's actually a good,
Tuscan Leather is actually a pretty catchy track. I think it's pretty
It's
solid.
Actually really good.
I disagree with the Wu-Tang track because it's misleading.
Yeah, but I
expect Wu-Tang.
Yeah, me too. But there's some good stuff on there.
There is.
It's really a really good album, and I resisted it for a very very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But now I pump it daily and. And I'm also listening to Emily Sandé.
Hmm.
I love Emily Sandé.
Hmm.
She has these two songs that I love. Like, I think of her over. This song called Kill the Boy. And it's a song where she's cheating on her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to figure out, now if I tell him, I'm going to kill him, right?
Hmm.
So it's like, Kill the Boy. This is other song called Easier in Bed. And she's saying, I don't like dark stuff, huh? So she's saying that, it's we're making love. That's all we know. Mm. Outside of that, we're not, we're nothing, right?
Mm.
We're together, but this fantasy that you have, I'm not helping you, I'm not fulfilling it.
Yeah.
So.
We're not related, we're not dating here.
Yeah.
This is purely a carnal relationship.
But it's like she wants them, right? But she realizes that it's not going to happen. It's a beautiful song, right?
So, the classic idea of, if we, we're good in bed together, we're sexually compatible, we may be friends compatible, but if you and I, as much as we may want to have a romantic relationship, it would be a disaster.
Because she says, she said, the only time you see me is in the dark.
Mm.
The only time that you see me is in the dark.
Mm.
I said, her lyrics, right? That's why... Again, lyrics. She said, the only time you see me is in the dark.
True.
And I'm like...
You can't argue with a good line.
Ugh.
You cannot argue with a good line in any song. Are there any song lines that you wish you had written?
Anything that Whitney Houston sings. I wish anything that Whitney Houston has sung, I wish I had written. Kill the Boy. Emily Sandé stuff.
Mm.
Adele has some great stuff.
Mm.
Like... She has this song called He Won't Go about addiction.
Mm.
And when I say it's a beautiful song, I was like, oh, I wish I wrote that song, written that song.
There are some lines that, for me, I just wish I had written. I'm thinking there's a line Bruce Springsteen has in Now my brain's blanking here, and a couple of my friends who are spring team fans are going to punch me for this. But it's like, hold on a second, the bridge. It's like someone took a knife, baby edgy and dull, cut a 6-inch valley through the middle of my skull. Yeah. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through my head. I'm on fire, that's the story. Paul Simon has a couple, too. Occasionally he busts a verse. She comes back to tell me she's gone, as if I didn't know that, as if I didn't know my own bed, as if I never noticed the way she brushed her hair from her forehead. And she said, losing love is like a window into your heart. Everybody sees you're blown apart. Everybody feels the wind blow. And it's like, damn. John Prine has a great one, too, in his song, in one of his songs. He says that, I guess love is like a Christmas card. You decorate a tree, you throw it in the yard. It decays and dies, and the snowman melts. Well, I once knew love. I knew how love felt. Wow. And you're like, damn it! Kristofferson can pull it off, too, in country. There are a few that just, they hit you hard.
I wish that I had written The Bluest Eye.
Who doesn't, actually?
Like, no, in all honesty, like, I really, and, like, The Bluest Eye and Sent for You Yesterday by John Edgar Wideman.
Ooh.
I wish that I could be John Edgar Wideman, folks. I wish I, if I had, if anything, I wish I could write a book like that. Like, that book is a, that's a beautiful song, too, right? That was a blues song, right? And so he, the way that he constructed the novel is like a blues song. I just wish.
Yeah. Well, we all have that, you know? Oh. I wish I, but I'm just going to take it when it happens. I'm going to kind of roll the dice, whatever comes in my life.
Yeah.
Art, I mean, that's what it is, yeah. You know?
I think, yeah, I mean, but
I don't want to be the next anybody, really.
I don't want to be Toni Morrison, because I can't, right? But I wish I could write. I wish I could write a sentence like that. I think everyone does. Like, I think you're right. People might not admit it, but there's certain people we wish we could write sentences like that.
Oh, I totally agree. There are some writers that I wish I could pull off what they did. But I'm not going to try. Right. I'm going to be like, okay, that's not who me. You know.
I'm going to be who I am.
When I started out in filmmaking, people were like, oh, you're going to be the next Spielberg. I'm like, no, because there already is a Steven Spielberg. Right. I want to be the first Scott Z.
I want to be myself.
I want to be the first one of me and have others emulate me in the end. Not that I think they ever will, but I'm okay with that, you know?
You don't know.
This is my lot.
You don't know.
I've often dreamed that if I ever was successful enough and I had people writing fan fiction about me and my characters or whatever, I would jump on those forums and write my own stories of them and write my and try and make the worst, the most vile version of slash fiction of my own characters. Because if anybody's going to do it, it should be the original author.
Right.
But I know what would happen. The internet trolls and the way people are on forums would be like, you've captured his style really well, but I don't think that, you know, Scott would write characters like this.
Right.
And not realizing, it was like, yeah, the author did this. Oh,
Scott, I hate to take this, but my throat is starting.
Oh, no, man, totally understand. I think we're way past the time.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, man. It has been a pleasure, man.
Same here, man.
I almost felt like we should split this episode into two halves now, maybe.
I mean, we can do it again.
We can do it in the future, man, and see, you know, what's going on. Because I think we only scratch the surface of some things.
Yeah.
And that's the problems cast I've found, is that we never get nearly enough. But real quick, before we go, so you're working on some new stuff. Where can people find you on the internet or anything? How could they get a hold of you and your stuff
well,
and such? Do you use the Twitter at all?
Oh, I'm on Twitter a lot. It's at Dr. Othello or Facebook. But
Dr. Othello or?
Yes, Dr. Othello. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or they can, my webpage, DannyHuiAuthor@WordPress.com.
Okay.
So they can find me there, information there. But yeah, I'm tweeting a lot these days, which is really interesting because I tend to tweet a lot, then stop tweeting a lot, but. Yeah, so they can catch me on Twitter. They can catch me on my webpage.
And, of course, your book is available through Sundress Publications.
Sundress.
The store.
Sundress, being BarnesandNoble.com.
Amazon.
Amazon, Piled Books. And in May, I will be in Ohio for the Ohio and a Book Festival.
Awesome.
Yeah, so my book got selected. So one of 10 festival authors. So
awesome, man.
I'll be
Congrats.
There. So if you want to come to Ohio and see me in May,
right
I'll be
right in your
there.
Backyard again?
Back in the backyard,
Columbus,
man.
Or
Columbus, Ohio.
It's gonna be in Columbus. Okay, cool.
So that's like my second home.
Excellent, man.
So yeah, that's what's going on
Excellent.
With me. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing what you're up to in the future, man.
Thanks, Scott. This
Take
is cool.
Take care, man. Take care. We'll see you soon.
All right.